it's morning again.
Keeps happening.
I know. Bad penny.
That's a good thing, because the alternative is also not good. So
this is true.
Yeah.
This is true. How you doing, James?
Not too bad. It's certainly for North America right now, it's in the summertime, some summertime. And we're what always happens is you're so excited to see your plants growing and they hit the top and they start burning. You're like, yay, everything's great. And then you're all of a sudden like, oh, what? Wait, I got to harvest now? What the hell? I just trained these things. So we'll talk about a little bit of that kind of stuff later today. But we want to talk about other stuff first.
Yeah, let's talk about other stuff too. Yeah. You know, when you mentioned summertime, I think one of these days we'll record in the evening and I can bring my setup out on the back porch so you can hear the coyotes in the background while we're recording. I think that would be fun.
If I did that where I live, all you would hear is deafening frog sound. So you would not hear anything other than it sounds very Cretaceous out here. Let's put it that way.
Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. We love it, but there ain't no recording going on outside.
Just you and the frogs.
Uh-huh. Maybe if there was a drought and the frogs shut up.
Nah, I want to hear the frogs.
Yeah, when you've got all your windows closed and the air conditioning running and you're still like, I got to put some earplugs in because I can't sleep. Those are loud frogs.
Wow. Okay. Yes. Yes. Those are loud frogs. Yeah. Huh. All right. Anyway, frogs and coyotes. Yeah. There we go. If you're still listening, we got a couple things to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk actually about hop stuff.
We are. First and foremost, new patron, William, Bill, Myra, thank you for joining us. Always appreciate the new patrons. You guys know how to find us on patreon.com/hopnology. You could be an insider and get on the Discord with us and chit-chat at all hours of the day and night. Like Discord's been beeping all morning.
Yes.
This morning.
Yep, a lot of beeping.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff going on. Interesting topic on there right now about wind walls and yep. How you deal with wind, which we'll have to maybe tee that up for a future recording.
Yep.
Because that's an interesting idea. But okay, what else is going on? So news out of the Brewers Association this week.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we mentioned them before, and the New Brewer magazine, as well as their online articles, which I love because they really give you insight into what's going on. They had already run through some downsizing, and they laid off some other folks. They're down to about 2/3 of their normal staffing. And the issue there is that they make most of their money from the Great American Beer Festival and other events. So they're hurting. They're hurting. A lot of event-type places like this are in big trouble.
Yep. Well, we canceled here in Madison. We canceled the Great Tastes in the Midwest, which I think is the second largest beer festival behind the Great American Beer Festival.
Yep.
And the Brewers Guild or the Home Brewer and Tasters Guild are like, uh-oh. Well, they got so much money, they don't care. But it's more about the fact that, you know, what? We've been doing this for 25 years. And it's like, yep, you know, shit happens.
It does. It does. It's tough. But as you've heard us say many times, support the Brewers Association if you can. It's a great organization, and they don't sponsor us at all. So this is pure, unadulterated, you know, really a fan of the organization here. And again, New Brewer is a great, great read. It comes out every other month just to understand the industry a bit more and get a sense for what is happening out there. It's good perspective to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hate to see them go away as a result of all this.
Well, when your brewery's not opened and you're not turning the cash, you gotta cut all of the absolutely, you know, non-essential costs. So You drop memberships, you do all that kind of stuff, and you just can't support a nonprofit like that. So,
No, you can't. It's true. It's tough. It's very, very tough. Feel for them and hope they land on their feet properly because we're supporters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on there. You mentioned some articles you were seeing lately about farm workers being hard to come by for harvest. Shocking.
Where seems to recall a few months ago, which could feels like 2 years ago, we talked about this being a potential issue. It's a real thing, people. And I was even in the produce section of the grocery store last night. I was just walking past to try to get to the meat counter. I don't eat that stuff. But anyway, so I noticed the prices. They had all these little signs next to all of the like fresh produce. It said, all prices are prorated based on the market daily price. Because, you know, it's basically like when you go to the restaurant and you see lobster on the menu, it says market price. That's what's happening to the produce, fresh fruit and vegetable industry now, because the price is fluctuating so badly because there's nobody to harvest this stuff or to pack it, wash it, do all that stuff because of COVID. We told you so. Now, yes,
we did. We did discuss this.
What we have heard nothing of is the condition of the work. This is the same workforce that's expected to harvest hops.
Mm-hmm. It's coming.
And what's the plan? And it's been absolute crickets.
So it's interesting. After we aired that episode, there was someone on Facebook, on one of the hop forums, it had the same question, you know, what about labor, da-da-da. And I made the comment, I said, hey, we just posted an episode about this, and we think there's going to be a problem here in terms of getting labor. And someone immediately responded the way they do on Facebook, because everyone's an expert, mm-hmm. and said, that's ridiculous. With unemployment, which then was at, I don't know, 8% mm-hmm. and climbing, the good old days when it was only at 8%. And they said, with all the unemployment, you'll have no problem getting people out in the fields. And before I could even respond, someone else wrote back and said, what are you kidding? You're not going to find those people who are unemployed are not the same people you need to work your fields. And on top of that, I would say with the stimulus, the unemployment stimulus, we're already seeing that people are happier in some cases and better off taking unemployment and the stimulus than actually going to work for low wages outside.
Yep.
For hard labor. So this is going to be a problem.
And it's not, I mean, the reason there's a shortage is because of COVID. So it's inherently a work environment that requires you to be very close proximity to others. And yeah, granted, for the folks working out in the fields, you're outside, but still, that work is awful. It's hot, it's hard work. And on top of that, you're going to make these people wear PPE? No. And so anybody in their right mind would be saying, hell no. I'm not mm-hmm. going
to
go there do
that. There have to be better things I can do with my time during paycheck than this.
It's not just the fact that I'm out of work. It's and I think more importantly so, a potential danger to your health and others. So where does that put us? It puts us in a very hard spot.
It does. It does. And to your point about the masks, I mean, look, anyone who's listened to more than one episode of our podcast knows if there's anything we say more than critical, it's me mentioning that I'm involved with Boy Scouts, and we're dealing with camp and stuff like that. And the largest difficulty with sending kids to camp isn't so much the proximity and the germ control and whatnot. It's the fact that you can't have people outside in 90 degrees wearing masks running around, because you're going to get people passing out right and left. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing to your point about being out in the field. You can't – there's a safety factor there. And, of course, I'm waiting for someone to edit this up and make it sound like we're anti-mask people. Neither one of us are
definitely
at all.
Not, no.
I mean they are – I'm going to use the other word. They're critical.
They are.
Making that work in a hot summer outdoor situation where you're already sweating bullets and getting overheated, this is a problem.
It's a big problem. It also highlights the fragility of our food supply chain, which I've talked about in the past. And also, this stuff just doesn't show up at your local market. There's a lot of effort and work that goes into actually producing, packing, distributing your foodstuffs, whether it's strawberries or lettuce or hops. So what we're dealing with now is highlighting the fragility of that and the essential nature of the highly physical labor that it takes to do this. And these people are that are doing this are the ones that are most marginalized in our society. And so this current state of the pandemic is highlighting all of those inconvenient truths that we have to deal with. And how does that inform one's decisions about what they do and the choices they make going forward? That's what I hope comes out of that. But it's going to be a problem for hops, and I don't know what that's going to do to the market.
No idea. No idea if stuff's going to be left on the vine or if it's going to increase costs to the point where, as a small-scale grower, you just can't sell anything at a profit. I don't know.
I was talking, I don't remember who I was talking with, but on a forum or, hell, it could have been via email. I don't remember. But they're saying, you know, what do you think is going to happen with all these hops? And I said, wouldn't it all surprise me to see a lot of 2019 and 18 crop being sent to extract? Because it's not going anywhere. Nobody's buying it. And it's just going to go bad. So you might as well send it to extract and get something out of it. It's going to cost you more to do it, right? It's going to cost you a bit more to have it turned into extract. But now you have a shelf-stable product that's going to be stable for, Christ, decades. So there is that out for some of the older crop. But it's like, well, what about the new crop coming in behind it? Well, it's probably going to sit in storage and be sold out of storage over the next few years as things change. But it's not like as soon as, let's say there's a vaccine, that all of a sudden all of the, 60% of the craft breweries that we're likely going to lose are going to open their doors again. It's not going to they're not there anymore. They've gone bankrupt. Nope. Or they've sold, or their brew house is scrap metal now. So now we have this massive, massive sharp drop in brewing capacity. There has to be a likewise reduction in hop production on a large scale.
Oh, yeah.
It's what's going to happen. Otherwise, prices are going to be so low, which may also happen, that the farmers that have been banking on the high commodity prices out in the Pacific Northwest are going to find themselves back in a world of hurt again. And I don't think that's going to impact, honestly, our small-scale non-traditional growers all that much, because they're operating in the niche of the niche markets. And those don't tend to be as volatile, not nearly as volatile as some of these other ones that are out, you know, larger, much larger commodity type scale. So for our small-scale non-traditional growers listening, don't freak out. And I've said it in the past that right now, more important than ever is reinforcing your personal relationships with your brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something they're not going to see from brokers. And those brokers are going to be contracting within their own fortified walls, trying to figure out how not to hemorrhage money. And their questionable customer service is going to get worse.
Yep, very good point. We've talked about this, I think, recently, that there's an opportunity here, and I hate to use that word amidst all the shit that's going on, but this is when, as you said, you shore up those relationships, and the odds are, as a small scale grower, you've got some degree of friends and family that are helping you harvest, or you have hopefully recurring labor that you've worked with who is available, so you'll be. It's one thing if you need 5 laborers and you can only get 4 versus a much larger farm that needs 300 and can only get 200. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference in terms of what you're able to do. I would say if you have to triage a bit, if you're looking at your field, suppose you've got 5 acres and you know you can only really get 2 acres pulled in, you know, given your labor. Think about what you're pulling in terms of, make sure you understand what varieties are currently out there that people want. You know, if you've got, you know, if one of the varieties you've got is Cascade, maybe let that one wither and die. Mm-hmm. If you have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, I had a second thought there and it just completely fell out of my head about that. Damn, I hate when that happens.
That usually means your coffee's been empty too long.
I drank it 3 hours ago. Uh-huh. I know what it is. Okay. The other issue, of course, is that those relationships that we just talked about, make sure you know what the brewers want. And again, market what's already out there and what you can bring that's different. But the brewers that you are reinforcing those relationships with, if there are specific things that they are still on board with you, yes, we want it, we want it, we want it. Okay, make sure you pull that down before you – and don't let it wither and die like you might let those those Cascade go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got nothing against Cascade. It's a wonderful hop, but you know.
It is a great hop. It's just too damn much of it. You think there's too much now. Come see me this time next year, and let's revisit those numbers. I think that for small scale, and this will segue into our next topic quite well, prepping for harvest. I know we talked about it last year, but it always bears talking about every year. But when we were looking for work for harvest, it was always easier for us to get harvest labor than it was to get labor for stringing and training and stuff, because frankly, we had like a lot of stay-at-home moms who were cooped up with their kids all summer and were like, I got to get the hell out of here. So, and their kids may have just started to go back to school or were getting ready to, depending. And so they were like, yeah, I can come work for half a day. Get out here. Come on out. You know, they just want to be with other adults. So you may still find that that's the case as long as, you know, you can provide some. You're not going to be able to social distance. You're just not going to. So people are going to have to get used to not breathing on each other. Take a half a day, or if you can, instead of a full day. Or it may require a little bit more effort on your end to sort of fill in those gaps from a labor perspective. But take it. That's just part of the business.
And we'll learn more. Look, we're at a crux once again. As we record this, it's the very end of June, and places are reopening, and things are getting worse and not better, and who knows?
Right.
Who knows? Right now, a lot of breweries are open again, or at least open for seating, whereas before they were just open for pickup. This all has very high potential to get worse again before it gets better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll be talking about this as things go on and change, but that's the 40,000-foot view as of right now.
Yep. Okay, enough doom and gloom. Let's talk about prepping the farm for harvest.
Because there will be a harvest, damn it.
There will be a harvest. Mother Nature, she no stop. We talked about prep, you know, you got to get your labor, you got to do this, got to do that before. And I don't want to hammer on that again, but I thought it would be good to talk about the mechanical side and sort of the checklist, like the pre-flight checklist I would go through to make sure everything was running tip top before we started harvest, because when you have mechanical breakdowns during harvest, that's the last time, you know, you need a breakdown. So Let's just go through those lists. I thought would be a good idea.
I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. And don't get used to that part.
What, things making sense?
Yeah. It's certainly coming from me. All the sense in the world? Yeah.
No.
The way I like to think about it is what, this assumes you've been doing preventative maintenance on your equipment all summer. So, shame on me for assuming that. But what are your critical mechanical components of your harvest? Now, I'm not talking, I mean, some of you are hand harvesting, and I get it. So this is going to be focused more on those of us that are mechanized. But all of us, nearly all of us, have to dry. So let's start with our dryer. And if you haven't, go back and listen to the last year's episodes with Dan, where we talk about drying and we talk about how to build a dryer. Those are consistently popular episodes. Tons of information in there. And it wouldn't hurt to take notes, frankly. We're not going to talk about that so much. But what we weren't able to get into is sort of operation and maintenance and things that maintenance and operation items that impact the efficiency of your dryer. And the efficiency leads to, you know, airflow, air velocity, pressure drop issues. And you can't have those variables really changing all that much. You need to know that your dryer was designed to put out 15,000 CFM at 1.5 inches of pressure drop. You need to make sure it stays that way. And there's things, small things that can really impact that, like cleaning the fan blades. I don't care what kind of fan you have, whether it's an axial fan, you know, like a propeller or a squirrel cage fan, those blades gunk up, certainly if you've run them for a few years. And they will gunk up usually with just dirt and lupulin. More the residue that builds up on those fan blades, usually on the leading edge, the less efficient they are. And the efficiency drops off dramatically.
And I know you've always said that there's nothing you like more than cleaning lupulin.
Oh, it's just my favorite. That's the thing I miss the most. Mm-hmm. Not. So get yourself a big-ass drum of denatured alcohol and go to town. Cleaning off the leading edges of your fan blades, even if you've run it for one season and, you know, one full season, you will find that there is gunk all over them. Clean it off. Don't just like brush it off. Get some solvent and clean them off to what they used to look like. And you'll also see, and certainly on an axial fan blade, you will see the leading edge of that fan blade probably start to show a little bit of wear. Clean it off. The older and older that fan blade gets, the more wear you're going to get on that leading edge and the efficiency drops. So you want to make sure to clean them off. If you've got axial fan blades and they're metal and they're showing a lot of signs of wear and unevenness, you can take a honing stone, just like you would use for honing or sharpening a knife, and you can gently redress those edges to smooth them out. That will get your CFM back up to where it needs to be. If you've got a squirrel cage fan, so just, you know, your oversized furnace fan, those are a little bit different. They will still gunk up, certainly if you're using what we call forward incline, where the little blades on the wheel are shaped like cups, and they're like scooping the air and pushing it forward. Those little cups, those little scoops, act just like that axial fan blade, where if they get too gunked up, the efficiency is going to drop off pretty dramatically. Hmm. Those fan blades are also, or fan wheels, are notorious for grabbing on to hop cones and debris and all kinds of stuff. Make sure there's no cones in there, no little bits of sticky tape that you might have used to seal up your dryer or anything like that. You know, mice, squirrels in a squirrel cage fan. Get rid of them. Because anything that's lodged into that fan is going to put it off balance. And it doesn't take much to make that type of fan start to hop around and jump around. And then you destroy bushings and bearings, and then your fan dies with a load full of hops in it. Yeah, not a good day. So make sure all of that stuff is cleaned out and cleaned off and running smooth.
Yeah, this and all the further stuff we're going to talk about here, it's that whole ounce of prevention idea.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't take the time right now, you will be very angry at yourself later.
It's going to be awful. Yeah, just depressed because you put all that work into getting that crop off into your dryer only to realize that if you would have taken an hour, just an hour, over a couple of days and tuned your dryer up, you wouldn't have lost your crop. And I don't care how big your dryer is. It could be the small one, prototype dryer from our old days, the bin dryer, or it could be a big one. They all work the same way. Make sure they work.
Mm-hmm. So a few weeks ago when we dropped the nutrients episodes, I did a whole lot of periodic table pictures of Instagram stuff. Where would I find gunk on the periodic table? Is that GK? Is that there somewhere?
That's gunk? That's
gunk.
Yeah, so you got to think Latin. So it's probably like QI or something like that. I don't know.
Okay, gotcha. You just keep referring to this gunk that we're going to find.
Yeah, it's there.
And I know you don't make up words.
I do not.
It's got to be there somewhere.
Yep. Just Google gunk. You'll find a lot of interesting pictures.
I probably shouldn't do that for my work computer.
I'm not going there. Anyway, okay. So sticking with that, so that's just general cleaning. The other thing you want to check is if you've got a fan that's belt driven, the actual fan blade or fan assembly is not directly coupled, shaft coupled to the motor, so it's got some sort of transmission on it, usually a belt. Check those belts for wear. check them for proper tension because they will slip. And if they're slipping, you are not getting the right RPM on that fan blade. And therefore, your both your pressure drop, so the power of the fan, and the volume of air it's moving are not enough. So we've had that problem 1 year that, and it was a triple belt drive fan. And it was just a little bit too loose. And the fan was slipping, just constantly slipping, not so much that you'd hear it, but so much that you'd be like, why the hell are these hops not drying? You know, it's taking twice as long. And you'd go back and you'd feel the fan, the tension on the belts. You're like, well, that's not really that bad. Until you went and checked the other fan that was actually doing its job. You're like, oh, shit. Well, there's your problem, right? So literally 4 seconds with a 10-millimeter wrench, it could have saved me 12 hours worth of drying time.
And think about how frustrating it is when you are queued up outside your dryer, which is overburdened, waiting for that next round to be able to go in. Any type of efficiency you can create, it's just worth it.
Yep.
It's just absolutely worth the time.
Yep. And so along with the belt thing is bearings, bearings and shafts. Hopefully, whatever fans you've bought have sealed bearings so you don't get a bunch of gunk in them. Some of them, though, still require, you know, and those are usually permanently lubricated. Some of them, however, are not. They have grease cirks on them. And look into your fan motor manual. Yes, doesn't everybody keep those? And it'll tell you how many hours of runtime that you have to grease those bearings. Also, make sure that you're using the right grease, because grease has different viscosities. And if you're meant to be, if you take the grease that you use to grease, you know, the hydraulic zerks on your tractor and use that same grease in high RPM bearings, you're going to be very sad, because the grease is the wrong viscosity and has too high of what we call stiction, static friction. And you can prematurely wear out those bearings by putting a grease that's too heavy into them. I know it's awful, but go to the hardware store. That's just such a tragedy to have to do that. Or even worse, the farm store. That is just, ugh, what a bad day that is.
Oh, come on. That's like a candy store.
It is, yeah. And get the right stuff. Get what you need and keep it there. And do not over-grease either, because you pump too much grease into those things. That's not good, because that can also cause too much actual pressure inside of the bearing housing, certainly if it's sealed, and you can blow out those seals, and then grit gets in there, gunk forms, and the bearings die. Hops are great at throwing off schnibbins. There's another one that you can use.
So okay, that you just made up on the fly.
The schnibbins form with grease to turn into gunk. Anything that is exposed, like that's in the airstream, clean. And that should be on your checklist. It doesn't necessarily have to be every day, maybe every other day, but we would have, every time we emptied a charge, we'd have a quick just review to make sure everything was okay. And if it wasn't, wipe it off. It takes 2 seconds to clean it. And the dryers I've seen that have never been touched, I'm just like, I can't believe this thing, A, hasn't burned down, and B, is still functioning. Because, wow.
If you're having trouble understanding the visual of all this, James is going to put together a diagram of how schnibbins add to grease to turn into gunk.
Yep.
And I assume it will be in crayon.
It'll be in crayon, but don't worry, it'll be a chemical formula. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
I'll show you the redox equation, how we balance the electron transfer and everything.
Excellent. As long as there are schnibbins and that you show us how to spell it when you do that, that would be great.
I may have to get Joe's help. Joe can help me with the electron redox reaction. So I think that's the dryer. With the exception of, I should say, it's not just the dryer. So that's the airflow part of the dryer. Then there's the moisture removal part, whether you're using dehumidification or heat. Dehumidification is not such a big deal because those, as long as they still drain, turn it on, make sure it works, obviously, should be pretty evident after about 2 minutes of you turning it on. If there's water coming out the back end, you're in good shape. Although there are usually air filters, intake filters in there. Open that up, blow the coils out, make sure they're not dusty, because if you have dust on those coils, it reduces the heat transfer and the efficiency is drops pretty good, and blow the dust filter thingy out is pretty miserable. Some of the really good ones, like the Quest dehumidifiers, have actually pleated filters. Make sure those are in good shape. Blow those out if you want. You could put a new one in. We always just blew them out, and you should be good to go there. Heated systems are a little bit more dangerous because cobwebs, and those things like to catch fire really easy. And so if you have a wood dryer and you're using heat, you have to be uber, uber careful. That heated airflow path is clean as a whistle. You can't afford to have anything really combustible in there. So go through with a fine tooth and vacuum it out. Get rid of all that old stuff. Get rid of all the mouse shit and dead porcupines you've got in there. And turn the system on. Make sure it fires. It's going to probably smell bad the first couple of times you fire it up. So fire it up and let it run, because you don't want those aromas going through your hotbed either. I hope you're not using direct fired heat. There's one of you right now that's at least one of you that's grimacing right now.
But hey, at least we told you how to get it up and running.
We did, yes.
You could have very easily said, if you're using direct fire heat, whatever. Uh-huh. But, you know.
Yeah, that. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I think that does a pretty good job of covering the dryer. Mm-hmm. Obviously, vacuum it out. Do whatever you got to do to get rid of all the old lupulin and bracts and stuff that you were too lazy to clean out from last year. And you should be good to go. Easy peasy. The harvester. What's that?
I was going to say, that's the dryer.
That's the dryer. So depending on the harvester you have, obviously, your pre-harvest gear-up maintenance is going to be slightly different. But in general, much like the dryer, if it spins and has whirly bits, make sure they're clean. And bearings are greased, shafts are clean. The biggest thing I found to be pain in the ass, if you're not paying attention to them, are belts, like conveyor belts. Make sure they're tracking straight. When goop, how about that? When goop builds up on those rollers, on the shafts of the, not shafts, on the belt rollers, the tracking gets all screwed up because one side's actually of the roller is increasing in diameter, so the belt's going to run the other direction. It's going to run downhill. Mm-hmm. Clean those off as best you can. Make sure there's no built-up goop on those. Totally different reaction, chemical reaction to form goop.
And there is at least one person out there going, oh, it was running straight when I ended the season, so I don't have to check that. I'm sure it's still fine.
Oh, sure, it's fine. It's no problem.
Things change when stuff remains idle. And this also, you know, hindsight being 20/20, begs the thought of, I hope you cleaned it off well when you packed things up for the winter.
Oh, you don't. You never do. Because people are tired, and they're just like, ugh. Sure. I'm done. Woohoo. Crack the beers. Everything's done. No, you still got another good 2 weeks of work. At least for us it was. And that wasn't even including cleaning up the field. That was just taking everything down. I mean, we used to take, on our Wolf Harvester, we used to take the chains off the side, all of them, and clean all the old grease off of them because they're full of goop. No, technically it was gunk. Yeah, it was gunk. And gunk. Soak them in diesel fuel, clean them. Clean all that stuff off of the gears and put it all back together, because they would be so just caked on there with nasty grease and lupulin and bracts. That's just, you're asking to destroy your, all of those sprockets and chains. And when you're dealing with something like a Wolf Harvester, those are not standard chain lengths. So it's not like you're going to run down to the Ace Hardware and get yourself a metric ag chain link. Not going to happen. So, you know, that something we haven't talked about is having replacement parts on hand. What are your wear items, and make sure that you have them, because I guarantee you at least one of them is going to die. And then if you're going to be like, son of a kind of, and you're going to go to the hardware store and they're not going to have it. Oh, the bin will be there for it, but it'll be empty. I guarantee you.
It'll be the only empty bin.
Exactly. The only one. And yep. Then, of course, you're going to go to the other hardware store in town, and they don't even have what you're looking for. So then you're like, I should have just driven all the way up to it. Or so I guess, you know, because that's never happened to me. So make sure you have, you know, your wear items. You know the ones, the pieces that if they broke, you'd be totally screwed. Yeah, have two of those. I mean, that's excluding the catastrophic, you know, destruction, self-destruction of a fan blade. I mean, you're not going to have extra ones of those kicking around usually, but yeah, do yourself a favor.
But have, yeah, but by that token, have in your phone the number for a machinist who you've made friends with.
Yes, correct. So in those scenarios, like when one of your main drive pulleys on your Wolf that's cast iron decides to snap in half because Friday... what are you gonna do? If you're not a good brazer and you can't brass braze cast iron, then you better know somebody who can, or find somebody who can make you a new pulley, because y'all got to start harvesting again come Monday. So tick tock. Those things do happen. Part of your plan could be having those people on standby or knowing where you can go to have it done. So Greg, that was a very good point.
Yeah. Well, I know we had that specific situation happen, and he made a friend for life in you in coming through for us.
Absolutely.
Unexpectedly at a critical juncture. So it I know we've told the story before, but...
Over a holiday weekend, even. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that was tough. But, you know, aside from those catastrophes, which could be a whole episode in and of itself, dealing with farm catastrophes...
Hasn't that been the last year and a half, really, though?
Oh, no, no, no. this is the easy stuff.
I was going to rename the podcast Hopnology, Dealing with Farm Catastrophes.
Dealing with Farm Catastrophes. No, not so much.
Harvesters. Preparing your harvester for the new season.
Yep. Sharpen your chopper blades. So if you have a bind chopper as part of one of your harvesters, chops up the bind once it's been stripped, sharpen those blades. Get them sharp. And we would sharpen them once or twice a year or a season during harvest, but we would hone them every day because it makes a huge difference on the efficiency of that chopper and probably cuts the noise by a factor of 80%, I'm guessing. The binds have a lot of silica in them, and they're very hard on cutters. So get those blades honed, and the motor that's driving that chopper will thank you. It doesn't have to work nearly as hard. Every morning before we would fire it up, we'd go up there and hone those blades, and we'd just use an angle grinder with like a 220 grit disc on it, and just polish the blade. You know, you're not trying to resharpen it and put a square edge on it again. We did that earlier before we fired up the harvester for the season, but this would just be taking any small nicks out of it and reestablishing that sharp square edge. It makes a world of difference. Clean off, clean out, get rid of the mice and the, like I said, all the porcupines you've got running around in your shop. Get them out of there. Does your harvester have fans on it for air classification? If they do, same fan maintenance applies. Because when those fans go down, your sorting goes for shit, and now you've got a bunch of leaves in your cones, and nobody's happy.
Yep. And you've got no labor, as we've already discussed.
Exactly.
To deal with that.
Exactly. It's not like you can all of a sudden take all your labor and start hand-picking. No, you've got a harvester. Make sure that those fans are clean and those fan blades are functional. And again, spinny, whirly bits, grease them, lube them, do what you got to do.
All right, so we have a working dryer and a working harvester now.
And like I said, I'm assuming your tractor's fine because you've been using it all season. But if it's not, sure. You know, make sure again, everything's lubed. Whatever mechanisms you've got for getting people up into the top of the canopy is functional, and that you have everything in place where it needs to be, so that when you say, okay, we're going to start harvesting Monday morning, you're not running around trying to get all your stuff staged. It's already done. That'll go a long way to keeping you sane.
Oh, yes. Or as you dig into doing all this pre-work, it'll make you more insane and really angry at yourself for what you didn't do at the end of last season to make this part easier. But it's a learning lesson. Every year you get a little more efficient if you take your own advice, if you take current you's advice for future you.
Yeah, that's the hardest advice.
It really is. Toughnology, dealing with farm catastrophes.